On this week's episode of the We Don't Know Either podcast, we chat about a very expensive oil change, the official dimensions of a kickball diamond, and one of the slowest moving vehicles you've never heard of.
And you won't need to be a rocket scientist to figure this one out.
We shall see, Scott, about that. We shall see. But first, a friendly reminder. Get our book. It's called We Don't Know Either, also the name of this podcast. Lots of great, interesting trivia facts and tidbits. Send it to the people that don't have trivia in their neighborhood, or play it yourself. Whatever. It's fun. Get our book.
And enjoy the show.
Enjoy the show. Hello, everybody, and welcome into episode number 326 of the We Don't Know Either podcast. I'm Lindsay.
I'm Nick.
I'm Michael.
I'm Scott.
Scott, welcome aboard.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, Scott is host extraordinaire and also now a full-time member of our trivia team.
Yes.
Can you confirm?
No, yeah, that's correct. Deputy Director of Operations. It's very exciting for me.
Yeah, well, you sound very enthusiastic.
I always sound very enthusiastic.
What do you want people to know about you? This is your first time on the podcast, your first week of District Trivia. What do you want people to know about you, Scott?
Oh, geez. I wasn't prepared for this.
I never tell people what I ask them.
I know. Now I need an actual answer. I have a lot of different interests. They're really random. A lot of them are non sequiturs, don't make sense, don't fit together, but I have fun. I love doing trivia. I loved hosting. And so far, this week's been great. Y'all have been really inviting, and I'm really looking forward to doing this.
Great.
We'll fix that in a little bit.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So wait, what are these like interests that don't match up together?
Oh, I don't know, like...
Jumbo shrimp?
Yeah, basically. Just all oxymorons. You know, like I played in band in high school. I played tennis. Like I officiate basketball. Just like a lot of things that are sort of similar but not really related.
Do you play basketball?
No, I was not very good. I got cut from my freshman high school team. It was very sad for me. But I've been officiating for more than half my life, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
A lot of crazy parents? Or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, parents are ridiculous. I don't really care what they have to say anymore.
What's worse, a trivia player arguing about a question or a parent arguing about a call?
Well, you know what? It's kind of funny. I think being a ref prepared me to be a trivia host because I know how to shut down arguments really effectively. I'm like, yes, sir, I heard you. I hear what you're saying, but we're done with this conversation.
Boom! Yeah. Coming at you.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, you brought an interesting fact, but we're going to get to you later because I'm feeling like Michael is going to kick us off today. I'm looking at you. You're ready to go.
I can tell. You know what? If there's one thing I know, that it's my fact is going to be right in Lindsay's wheelhouse.
Okay. Oh.
For sure. Mm-hmm. So the Bugatti Veyron.
Those are just words. That's a made-up language. You're speaking Vulcan to me.
That's what I figured.
I'm out. See you in 20 minutes, everybody.
Scott, Nick, you guys know what the Bugatti Veyron is?
I know that it's an expensive
car.
It's a very expensive car.
The most expensive car?
I don't think it's the most expensive car. It's probably up there, though. I think the lowest cost for a Bugatti Veyron is somewhere between $1.7 million, give or take.
Whoa.
That's the least expensive model of the Veyron, for example.
Okay, cool.
And then you can upgrade to a nice version from there.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, does that come with leather seats or?
I think roll windows, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, wow. All right.
It sounds like you guys are at least familiar with the car itself.
Oh, yeah. You stick the key in, you turn it.
I would bet not.
No, there's I don't want to.
I don't know if there's a key or not on it. Actually, this is one of those things I didn't do research in because I didn't think, is there a key on the Bugatti Veyron would be a question that I got.
I think there's a key that you stick in, not for the ignition, but you put a key in, you like turn it, and it lowers the car, I believe.
Okay.
It lowers the car like a couple inches, when you can,
I think there's an adjustable suspension to it to make sure you can go over like...
A pebble on the road.
Exactly.
It scrapes the ground on a normal
basis. Well, it's funny. I pulled up the YouTube video tied to my fact, and they actually had to put special jack on it to get it up in the air.
Okay.
Because the standard lifts in the mechanics in the mechanic shop couldn't get underneath the car to lift
it
up
the
normal. Because
it was too low.
Because it was too low to the ground.
Ew, I hate that.
So, but, you know, $1.7 million minimum for the car.
Sure.
That's typically ranges between $1.7 and $3 million. My question is this.
Uh-huh.
How much is an oil change on the Bugatti Veyron?
What kind of oil does it use?
I
have to find a dinosaur fossil and extract the oil directly from this specific fossil? I'm assuming you don't take it to Jiffy Lube.
No, I'm assuming this isn't a Jiffy Lube run.
with a coupon apply. So where? So I'm assuming it's a specialty shop, right?
This is This is according to Royalty Exotic Cars, which is a luxury car specialist and rental company based in Vegas.
Oh, okay. All right.
I have nowhere. Okay, so how much does an oil change cost?
Are you supposed to get your oil changed?
Does it include like changing out the wiper blades and the air filters?
I understand, this is specifically 100% just the oil change.
Just the oil change. Okay. Does it use a special kind of oil that costs more? I mean,
I'm
that could be the only
does.
Thing that makes it like so much more expensive.
It's just made of diamonds.
Let me give you a little background here. The Veyron uses, this is quoting directly from the right. CNBC article.
The tears of orphaned children.
Yes. And half a unicorn, I think.
Yeah.
The Veyron uses a dry sump oiling system with 16 different drain plugs, accessible after intricately removing parts of the underbody, which takes hours. Refilling requires removing the car's grille, rear fender liners, rear deck, including rear brakes, which are bigger than the front brakes.
You have to take the rear brakes off of the car to change the oil?
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the idea of taking the brakes off of a car once the brakes are in the car. I want to put that out there as a blanket statement.
For a car that goes this fast,
how fast does it go?
The car has a... I'm not sure if it still holds the Guinness World Record for fastest street legal production car. But it did at one point at 267 miles per hour.
That seems excessive to me.
It does.
Like,
it seems
really excessive.
Yeah.
Where do you even drive that? Like, do you just rent a desert and just go? I don't understand.
Well, if you have $1.7 million to buy the car, I'm pretty sure you can rent a stretch of desert. That's not
a
problem.
Well, I got to talk to the Las Vegas company that you're involved in.
Yeah, you take them to the track.
That's exactly what it is.
Take it down to Richmond Motor Speedway.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay. So, Scott, what do you feel like would cost an oil would cost there an oil change would cost
what does an oil change cost I
$100
I
take mine to the dealer. It's included in the package.
If you take it to the dealer, it's $100.
Depending on the car, it's anywhere from like 40 to 90, give or take.
So more than that would be my guess.
More
for
than
this
that. Lindsay doesn't know anything about the car. She's dead on the money. It is more than than $100.
I was getting ready to go the other way, that if you spend $1.7 million on the car, it better come with these standard oil changes included in the cost.
That's fair.
All right. So so more than 100.
Yes.
Less than the $1.7 million of the car.
I'm going to say, since you have to do all of that mechanic work, and that takes a really long time, I assume. I know nothing about cars, as I've established. I'm going to say it costs $7,000.
Okay.
Because it's a lot of mechanical work. There's probably a lot of liability insurance from, I would assume, the mechanic and the dealership, or not the dealership, but the people working on it. They got to have some, that seems like a thing that they'd have. Okay, $7,000, locking it in.
Okay.
I don't know if it's deputy and director thinking alike, but I had in my mind $7,400.
Wow.
I don't know why that number just stuck, but yeah, okay. That's my guess.
Nice. You're still hired.
All right.
There's a lot of podcasts left, Scott.
I'm going to do some quick math.
Oh, great.
Okay.
Buckle up.
All right. So if we're going with a standard oil change is $100,
mm-hmm.
and the average cost of a car is $20,000, $25,000, $20,000 to make the math easy.
Sure.
That means that the average oil change is 0.5% of the cost of the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
So if the car is $1.7 million, and we are assuming that this is more expensive than the average change, so that would take it from 0.5% to 1% would put it somewhere in the realm of $20,000.
$20,000, okay.
Yeah. So 1% of the cost of the car would be $20,000. That's what I'm going with.
I quit. I'm so frustrated. I'm so quit. $21,000 is
wow. Oh, man.
No, that's some good. That's some good logic. And he gets it right because he takes the time to actually think about it. Unlike us, who are just blindly throwing out guesses. You'll
just
fit in well here.
Michael, this is your primer for your Learned League entry this season. Is if you actually read the question and think about it, the answer may come to you.
Yeah. $21,000. This is according to the CEO of Royalty Exotic Cars. I was watching a little bit of the video where they were working on it. They were working on one of their cars. They were saying 27 hours is generally what it takes to do it.
27 hours.
Man hours.
How can you go without your Veyron for that long?
Yeah,
you just drive one of your other ones.
Yeah, just drive that thing everywhere.
It actually says that. Let's see if I can find it here.
Yeah, what's the loaner car for that?
Is it, how many days did you say it took?
It's 27 hours is what they were saying.
Okay. So the better part of a week.
Yeah.
So, yeah, what do you do? I guess you take the metro or the bus.
I mean, you can't take that car over a speed bump anyway, right?
No, that's
so
true.
So you're
too.
A little bit restricted. Yeah.
It's funny that you mentioned it's like, oh, what does a new cost? It's about the price of a new Toyota Camry.
Is
the oil change.
Right.
They recommend you change it once a year, and that's whether the car has been driven or not. The service does include all fluids in the vehicle and other routine maintenance.
Okay, I would hope so.
It does include the wipers.
Just a follow-up fact, what do the tires cost for a Bugatti Veyron?
$250,000.
not a little high, a little high.
Okay, so your $200,000. Average tire.
No, just tell us.
It's $38,000 just for the tires.
$38,000, wow. Great. Who's got a segue from the cars?
So speaking of world records and fastest cars.
Yay.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a new world record set this week.
Oh.
So, or at least as of recording, and I assume it will likely not be challenged.
Oh, okay.
Between now and when we publish this. So there is a man whose name is Kami Rita.
Okay.
Okay.
What's up?
Kamirita.
We'll send you a link.
Kami Rita. He is 49 years old, mm-hmm. and he just set the record for most number of times summiting Mount Everest.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so he's been to the top of Mount Everest more than any other person ever.
And do you want to know
how many times has he climbed Mount Everest?
Super interesting. Mount Everest was just in the news recently because they just had two fatalities, unfortunately.
Oh, did they? They also started a huge cleanup project recently.
Yeah. Well, somebody posted a picture on Instagram and they're having problems that there's so many people summiting at once. So there's that window from here's the peak of Mount Everest, and there's the path that's on this mountain trail,
right?
And people are just getting backlogged. So it's a picture of almost 200 to 300 people in line at the tallest mountain on Earth, just waiting to go to the top. And that's super dangerous conditions because you are breathing, a third less oxygen available,
right,
or something like that than you would be down. So people are dying because they can't get the air, and they're just standing in line, literally standing in line at the top of Mount Everest, and it's caused a death recently.
How much it would bother me so much to go to a place where, very few people have ever been in the history of the human race and have to wait in line.
Yeah, we'll show you the picture. It's really this tiny, narrow path, and it's nuts that there's that many people waiting there. This was my interesting fact. A little while ago, it cost about $70,000 to summit Mount Everest between Sherpas, permits, gear.
Right.
That's what they estimate, 70K.
This is this guy, Kami Rita, is Sherpa. Mm. So,
what do you think, Scott? Would you climb Mount Everest?
I'm stuck on sevens. Would I climb Mount Everest? Yes. Could I? That's the question. I don't think so. Yeah, it would be an incredible thing to do.
I was reading something. 1 in 4 people die trying to do it.
Really? That seems high these days.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how accurate or recent that stat is. I did get it from Sports Night, from Aaron Sorkin from the early 90s. I was watching Sports Night the other night.
As long as you have a legitimate source.
Yeah.
So, guesses? Number of times? Number of trips to the top? I can tell you this. He set the record by doing it twice in 1 week.
Twice in a week?
Yeah, that was the record breaking, and then the next one was both twice in 1 week.
Oh my gosh.
That was a record in and of itself. Nobody had ever done it twice in 1 week. So he was the first person to do that, and it happened to be the record breaking one as well.
By the way, Michael, I'm showing anywhere around 5 to 8%.
Okay.
5 to 8% for deaths on Mount Everest of people who attempt to summit the mountain. Okay, so if he's doing it twice in 1 week, I was going to guess 25 times, but that seems really low if he did it twice in a week.
Well, he's also the first person to ever do it twice in 1 week.
Yeah, but my initial gut was around 20 times, and now that seems really silly.
I was thinking closer to 500, something like that.
Okay.
He's got to be up and down all the time. If he's a Sherpa, he's going
it's
that many.
It's his job, right?
Yeah, it's his job, right? He must be in demand.
Native Nepalian? What is
yes.
I don't. I'm sorry.
Nepalese.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Sorry, Nepal.
Yes.
Or Tibetan. I keep forgetting what's the other side of the mountain.
That's not the side that people go up. Nepal is the side that people mm-hmm. go up.
Right.
He is from Nepal, but I believe he is Sherpa.
Right, but what's the other side is my question. Is it Tibet?
That sounds right.
Oh, God. Yeah, we don't know either.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's 49 years old.
Yep.
You got to figure he goes. How long does it take you to go up Mount Everest, too? That's another question.
So it's a couple of days. So, like, once you get to the base camp, then you've got to, like, wait your turn, I guess. So it does take a couple of days.
Hmm.
So the actual summit, I think, from the last spot where you're waiting until going up to the top, I think is the same day.
Oh. This says 2 months, but that was just a quick Google. How long does it take to just climb Mount Everest? So I'm not really looking that much into it.
That's got to be starting from base camp.
7 to 9 weeks to complete the entire expedition.
Yeah, but I assume a lot of that is camping and waiting.
And it will take you at least 40 days in total to reach the summit. You'll reach the base camp by the end of the first week, and it'll take you 40 days to reach the summit.
Oh, okay. So, shows you what I know. Well, he did it twice in 1 week, so I assume he came down from the top to back to base camp and then picked up another group and went up to the top with them again.
I guess so.
So
the other dude called in sick.
Yeah. He's like, see ya.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, when he was interviewed about breaking the record, he's like, oh, well, I didn't know they kept records on that kind of thing. If I knew they had, I'd have gone a lot more often.
Yeah. Very humble.
Yeah. He goes, as long as you have oxygen tanks, it's not really that big of a deal.
Yeah. So like I said, my original guess was, I don't know, 2025-ish, but I think it was higher than that. So I'm going to lock in 40. I think double my initial gut of it. I think 40 is right about where I want to lock in.
I'm going to stick with my 500, but I suspect I'm low on this. Low? I don't know. Maybe I'm way off the map, but I don't know. Yeah, I'm going to stick with it.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
Michael.
So that's 10 trips 1 year for every year of his life, basically.
He's probably been doing it since he was like in his teens, I bet.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm going to say like 40.
You're going to say 42?
Yeah.
So you're going to answer literally the same thing that Lindsay did.
Fine, 41.
Okay. All right. So I think this is a great time to bring up a good like trivia quizzing sort of basic rule.
Yeah.
And that rule is, for the most part, if you have a gut answer, there's a reason you have a gut answer. It's because maybe you've done research on it in the past. Maybe you had an interesting fact about climbing up Mount Everest and you read something and it was stuck there in the back of your head. The current record, 24 times summiting Everest.
Hitting my chair because I'm angry because I just something in my gut said 20 to 25.
Ugh. Right. Always go with your first instinct. There's a reason why that was your first instinct.
Yeah.
Scott, in which case you're just
say.
So wrong.
And you're so wrong.
No regrets.
Okay. It must have been. I've done a lot of Everest research in the time of my trivia days. So
yeah.
It must have just been in the back somewhere.
Something
but when you
said
2 in 1 week, that's what threw me off that must be low. So
right. The people behind him, there are 3 people at 21 who are still alive, but they all pretty much said, yeah, we're not doing that again. Like
retired.
They're retired from mountaineering. Yeah.
Wow.
So
congratulations, man.
Pretty far and away the leader, and he has no plans of stopping. He is planning on going until he's 60.
Wow. Well, we'll send him this podcast episode, and he can listen to it on his 40-day expedition to the top again.
Yeah.
We wish you the best of luck.
You know what? We'll send him a copy of We Don't Know Either the book.
Yeah.
Enjoy. Take a picture of it on the top of the world.
Hey, who knows? Let me save this. Maybe my guess was prophetic. Maybe he'll get to 500.
He'll get to 500.
He's going to get to 500. I believe in him.
Wow.
I believe in him.
I like your positivity.
Yeah, spin zone. There
okay,
we go.
So I would like to spin this. So you gotta go a long distance to climb to the top of Mount Everest.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about distances specifically to get to where you need to go. Scott, I know one of your interests are kickball.
Kickball is an interest of mine. That's true.
You captain the team.
I got the big C, Ongo Gablogian's air conditioners. A little shout out. We're great people. Just ask us.
Yeah. So I would like to know, according to the World Kickball Association.
Uh-oh.
What's the distance between the bases? And a standard, World Kickball Association.
60 feet should be, right?
I think I know this.
Yeah?
Because I'm pretty sure I have an interest in kickball as well.
What is your answer?
I'm going to say 40 feet. I think
Nick?
It's 40.
So baseball is 90, softball is 60,
mm-hmm.
Kickball is drinking. So I'm going to, I think with Michael, I think it's less than 60. I'm going to say it's 41 feet.
Okay. Both of you guys are wrong. Scott, you nailed it. It is 60 feet.
Thank you.
It is 60 feet, same as softball. And you're right, baseball is 90, but it is 60 feet. And I know that was a very simple, interesting fact, but I didn't realize that it was the exact same distance as softball. The NCAA tournament is going on right now for softball and caught a couple of those games here and there. And I think that it's very cool that it's the same size.
Yeah, it's about 60 feet or 22 casual paces. Oh. Oh, yeah. That's how I counted out. Got a technique.
Casual paces.
Casual paces, yeah. You know, I don't know how long my strides are. Just casual steps.
It's a trot.
Yeah, keep it chill.
Okay, cool. So my fact was you know, a fact. Now I'd like you to share your fact, please.
All right. I was a little scattered. I've like a couple, but they're all related. It's all about one interesting fact, and there's a lot of little things about it. And as I'm talking, we'll see where we end up. So NASA, National Aeronautics Space
Administration. Yes, NASA. I've heard
NASA.
Of NASA. Familiar.
You've heard of it? Civilian organization, technically, yes. Not relevant, though. So,
space.
Titusville, Florida, Kennedy Space Center. They have their vehicle assembly building. No one really thinks about where these things get put together. You think they're designed wherever they're designed, but someone has to physically set these things up, and they're
how
massive.
How dare you, sir? I have absolutely thought about how where they built these things.
Where do you think they built them?
I wasn't sure, but I'm glad you're here for it now.
Well, they build them in they put them together in Titusville, Florida. So it's called the Vehicle Assembly Building. It is the fourth largest building in the world by volume, which is probably not generally how buildings are measured.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've never heard of a building described by volume, right? It's always square footage.
It's usually square footage, yeah.
Yeah, volume. So we have, it's 525 feet tall. It's 716 feet long, 518 feet wide, which brings us to, I did not do this math, but it's 129,428,000 cubic feet of space in this building where they set everything up. It was originally designed for them to put together the Apollo mission rockets and the Saturn V rockets. Sure. Now they don't do that anymore. They made it so they can support the space shuttle, do all these different things. But after they build it, that's when it gets complicated. They have to get it out of the building somehow. And that's where we come up to a little bit to the fact. So they have a 6 million pound crawler that moves the equipment about a mile to where it has to actually launch.
A mile?
Yeah. Whoa. So I have a couple things on this crawler. How fast do you think the crawler goes? And what is the gas mileage on this crawler?
Coming in hot. I love it.
So the it's just how much? Six?
It's 6 million pounds, this crawler. I don't actually know what it looks like yet. For some reason, I didn't look that up. But I'm imagining something along the lines of like a flatbed truck mixed with the piece of equipment that pushes your plane back at the gate.
That's what I was
thinking. That's kind of what I'm guessing. Yeah.
The plane pushing thing was exactly
And this is pushing the rocket ships?
This is bringing the like rockets and the boosters and all of that stuff and the space shuttle at some point from this vehicle assembly building to where they launch it.
To your initial point, I have never thought about how spaceships get to go to the part before they go to space.
Oh,
like, there's a spaceship. There it is. It exists.
I've been on this fact for years. There's the building itself is, I don't know why. The building itself is crazy. Hey, it's so big, it has its own weather.
Real quick, that's your secret phrase. I've been on this fact for years.
I've been on this fact for years.
For years.
I've been on this fact for years.
I have been on this fact for years.
You have, because it's your secret phrase.
I've been waiting to come on this podcast. I was like, if I ever do, it has to be something about the vehicle assembly building. It has its own weather, you guys.
Yeah,
it's so big.
Clouds on inside.
Yeah, the clouds form. It like mists down. It can actually rain inside of this building because it's so massive.
I'm sorry. I thought that you meant that the building itself is like in its own zip code and has its own weather. No, you mean like inside
the building. Inside the building, there is weather. Right. Like outside weather inside the building. Clouds form.
Yeah.
The humidity in Florida makes it so.
That seems like not productive for building things.
Well, it's climate controlled.
Yeah.
Like if you were to turn the climate control off, like you turn the air conditioning in the building off, then it would naturally form like rain clouds inside the building.
Mm, okay. I knew that climate control thing.
They have 40 megawatts of air conditioning equipment, including 125 ventilators on the roof, supported by lots of stuff that's too technical for me to read or understand.
Sure.
Okay, so you want to know how fast it moves at its peak.
I might have gotten like head over my skis with this fact a little bit because there's other stuff too. The doors are a world record for the largest doors.
They're
456 feet high. You could fit the Statue of Liberty in there.
Yeah, yeah. No, that makes sense. If you're trying to get like the Apollo rocket out of the building, you got to have a big door.
Exactly. So, but yeah, the craziest part was this crawler. When I read the fact, I literally just started laughing out loud. It was so absurd.
Yeah.
But yeah, the speed of the crawler and how many, and the gas
miles
mileage.
Per gallon.
And let me tell you, if you're thinking miles, you probably want to be thinking in a smaller unit.
Yes.
Yeah, we're talking feet per gallon here.
I'm sorry, I'm still trying to picture these doors. I assume they go up instead of just hinge out.
Yeah, they take 45 minutes to open.
Yeah, these would be like accordion doors.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just assuming.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're massive.
I'm just picturing how big the door knocker
is. Those are some massive knockers. Thank you, Herr Frankenstein.
Yeah.
That's no, nobody?
No, I did laugh at you. I did also learn that they actually used original props from the original Frankenstein movie in Young Frankenstein, yeah. which I thought was very cool.
Frankenstein?
Yeah, they used original props. Like Mel Brooks wanted to be legit and found the prop master. And he was like, hey, you can actually use these for your movie. And he was like, all right. So fun fact, bonus fact, unrelated. Okay, so feet per gallon. I'm going to say, go ahead.
For have we done the top speed yet?
No.
No, we have not had a top speed, yes.
I'm going to say 4 miles an hour.
I think that's way fast. I'm going to go with like half a mile an hour. I'm going to say that this thing, when it leaves wherever it's stored and has to go to the building to get the rockets to pull it out, it has to leave like a week in advance. Like, this is a whole trip for the guy who's driving it over. It takes him a whole week to drive it over to the building.
Well, it's 45 minutes just to open the doors.
Yeah.
Yeah, get your podcast ready for it. Have all your We Don't Know Either set.
You said it's a mile away from where it needs to go.
I believe so, yes.
I think that 1 mile per hour. I think it takes an hour
to go one mile. Okay.
Yeah, I think it takes an hour. It takes an hour to go from point A to point B. I think what you're saying makes sense that it's slow, but I think you need to get it there same day. I feel like that's something they would need to.
When it absolutely positively has to be there overnight.
Yeah, so I'm going to lock in 1 mile per hour.
Well, you nailed it. 1 mile an hour.
Go with your gut. What did we learn today?
It's moving.
Okay, so now we need to figure out how much.
How many gallons of gas it takes.
How many feet per gallon. I thought about doing the math and actually figuring out. It wouldn't be very difficult, but I'm not going to do it in my head because it won't come out right. But yeah, feet, it gets feet per gallon. We're not even talking miles per gallon, if you want to break it down. But.
So 100 feet a gallon? Does that seem right?
How many feet are in a mile?
5,280.
Thank you.
1,000 feet per gallon.
You think it takes 5 gallons of gas to go the 1 mile? Or 10 gallons of gas to make the round trip?
I was going to say about 2,500 feet per gallon.
Well, I believe Nick was the closest. We had 42 feet per gallon.
42 feet per gallon. I doubled it up at 100.
Yeah, we're talking big time gas guzzler tax on that.
To be clear, that is 0.0079 miles.
Whoa.
I mean, that's pretty much what I get driving anyway. I got a lead foot.
Yeah.
What does the car that you said, what was their
the
miles?
Bugatti Veyron?
What is that miles per gallon,
that
just
is
for
a
comparison's
great
sake?
Great question.
So that's going 267 miles per hour, and this is going 1 mile per hour. Who do you guys think would win in a race?
How long is the race?
Yeah.
The Bugatti Veyron gets 8 miles per gallon city, 14 miles per gallon highway.
All right.
Seems pretty standard.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in city driving.
In city driving, 8 miles a gallon.
Yeah, I mean, keep in mind, you know, how much does that Veyron weigh? It's probably close to a 1-to-1, right? Like horsepower to weight or whatever
ratio,
it is. Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, here, you know, we're talking about 6 million pounds.
Yeah, that's
which
a
is a lot of pounds.
It's more than I weigh. This is about somewhere between 4,000 and 4,300 pounds.
Well, we will make sure to put a picture of it in the link dump. And Scott, well done on your first episode.
Thank you.
You'll be back in the future again. But we're going to wrap this week up. So here we go. I'm Lindsay.
I'm Nick.
I'm Michael.
I'm Scott.
And we don't know either.
Bye.